Hello, everybody out there in internet radio land. This is Blake Ruby. Welcome to my show, Gods and Goddesses. I hope you're doing okay. I hope you had a good week. My week was all right. I was off. I didn't have to work. It was slow. I like it that way, though. Very slow. And it's a bit overcast today here in San Antonio. I went out this morning and took care of some business, personal business, in regard to our bed. We're getting another bed. Believe it or not, we've had like 5 mattresses over the last year. So finally, I think we're going to get the best mattress we possibly can. I'm getting a Tempur-Pedic mattress. I had one a long time ago when I retired from the Army in 2004. And it lasted 4 years. Actually, I could have kept it longer than that, but I decided to get a regular spring mattress. But now, today, I bought this Tempur-Pedic. I traded in the one we have, which is, it's not cutting it. It's a fairly decent mattress. It costs like $1,500. But this one's about $3,000, and so it's going to be, I think, this will be okay. We've had problems with the mattresses getting indentations in them. This one here, the one before, they replaced it because it had a defect. And this one, too, has a defect, believe it or not. So we're going to get a new mattress. Then I went after that to the dirt track, ran around the dirt track a mile, and singing cadence as I went around. That's one thing I've started doing. When I was in the Army from 1982 to 2004, up until about 2000, when I got a profile for running, I used to run all the time. My prime of my running, my running career was when I was about 38 years old. I was stationed at the Language Institute in Monterey, California. I was approximately 38 years old. Yeah. And I could run 2 miles in under 12 minutes. So about a 6-minute mile pace, and that was pretty good. And that was better than the average soldier at the time. I would say that's actually in the top 10%, I would say, from what I observed over the years. And we would have a competition every month there at the Language Institute called the Commander's Cup. And I had a team. I was the captain because I was a sergeant. Then I became a sergeant, staff sergeant, E6. So when I got there to the Language Institute, they put me in charge of the run team because it was a pretty big thing for the commanders and the first sergeants to have a good run team, you know, to be competitive with the other Army companies there in the Presidio of Monterey. And we would compete every month, and it was quite a heyday. You know, there was a lot of people that showed up to watch it. And so besides all the other Army companies, Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, Echo, Foxtrot, Golf, I was in Golf Company. I think there was also Foxtrot and Hotel Companies, too, F&H. And then there were the Marines. And, you know, the Marines are pretty bad dudes, good runners. And occasionally, not all the time, but the Navy SEALs would sometimes participate. But while I was there, while I was the captain, we won the trophy 5 times and came in second 4 times out of 12 months. And that was, I'm proud of that. It was a pretty good accomplishment. And so we had 2 rows of 5 members running, and the captain on the outside and the guide on bearer in the front. And they had a 2-mile course laid out. When I first got there, we ran around the dirt track. But then they created a course around the Russian school there in the Presidio. Actually about 2.1, 2.2 miles. And the best time ever was in May of 93. And we did 11 minutes and 39 seconds. That's a 12-man team, you know, the guide on bear, and that's a pretty hard thing to carry too, you know, and run fast. They're heavy, you know, they're long and heavy with a banner on the top, the guide on. Anyway, so I've always been a good cadence caller. Ever since I went to basic training in AIT, I would scream my lungs out, you know. The drill sergeants wanted you to sound off, so I sounded off all the time, gave it 100% effort. And I might have mentioned that before in the previous show. And so I did a little research on the internet, and I typed in running and singing. If you can sing while you run, it's really good for the lungs. It increases your endurance. And did you know that Beyonce, actually, her father, I guess when she was growing up, or I think it was her father, had her run and sing while she was running to increase her endurance so she could, you know, have that stamina on stage. So it's a pretty common thing, and I like to do it because one thing I've noticed is that it really helps me get my pace. I fall into a pace, and it's not so hard to run after a while. And I've got this cadence down pat, you know, where, I mean, I can sing the songs like left, 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 right, left, left, right, left, left, right, left, left, right, left, keep it in step, or one, two, three, four, hey, run, run, run some more, hey. Or C-130 rolling down the strip, airborne ranger on a one-way trip. But I've got I like the kind of cadence where it's like spontaneous off the top of the head, you know. You know, like, here we go, all the way, going to make it, going to take it, up a hill, down a hill, through a hill, 1 mile, no sweat, 2 miles, better yet, having fun in the sun, fresh air, feels good, in the middle, keep it tight, in the rear, bring it up, in the front, keep the pace, all right, out of sight, rock steady, stay ready, everybody, sound off, and on, you know. Yeah, I like that. I'm a singer, you know. Tomorrow I'll go to church. I'm on the praise team, and we sing these songs. And right now, I haven't been practicing my music. You know, I've got about a repertoire of about over 100 songs easily that I know the words for, you know. I memorize the words for them. But lately, I just haven't been inspired to do it. And if you tuned into my last show, you heard that I like to read books aloud. And that's what I plan on doing today. And I'm going to read from three books, but just to finish up what I did today. So after the running, I went to in a backyard here. We've got two trees, two fruit trees, a peach tree and a plum tree. And last year, they didn't do so well. I think they caught some kind of disease. Previously, they've done very well. I planted them back in 2011, and especially the peach tree. It's been producing like 50, 100 peaches every year. But last year, and I don't know about this year, it has sprouted a whole lot of leaves, and I was worried that cold weather that we had might have killed it. But the leaves have sprouted. It survived. And that's amazing because it got down to like 10 degrees. And so it's a very resilient tree, but it's got a lot of dead branches on it. So I cut off a bunch with a saw that I bought at Home Depot yesterday. And the plum tree, too. The plum tree looks like it's completely dead. But I don't know. Last year it had a few leaves on it, but nothing so far this year. And what else? I took a nap a little while ago. And I'm going to get right into reading these books. I participated in the speech contest. I didn't actually give a speech, but I had a role to perform in a speech contest we had earlier this week. And I was to lead everybody in the saying of the Pledge of Allegiance and also give an inspirational thought. So, you know me. I talk about spirituality, and I figure the time for spirituality and evolution, my friends, is always right. As secret and esoteric as it may be, and a lot of people don't like to talk about spiritual things because it frightens them, you know, and I get frightened sometimes too. And religion's a different thing altogether. You know, religion, some people can handle that. And which reminds me, I wore a hat yesterday, and it says, God is good all the time, and on the back it has Jesus. And I'll tell you, some of the looks that I got from people, it was like I was a leper or something, you know. There's not much talk of God nowadays. And I think because of the pandemic, people believe, well, how could God let this happen to us, right? How could God allow for all these people to die? People dying everywhere. Well, I'll tell you, the answer is because God gave us free will. And when we make mistakes, we have to pay the price. That's universal law, my friends. And there should be no doubt in anyone's mind that we make mistakes. You know, like supposedly the pandemic began because someone was eating bat soup in China, in Wuhan, you know. So they shouldn't have done that. So you don't eat bat soup. You don't eat bats or whatever animals that might cause viruses, you know. That's a mistake on our behalf. You can't blame God for that, right? That's logical. Anyway, with so much negativity nowadays, too, I think the one good thing about the pandemic has taught us what's more important in this world. You know, this fantasy violence that we see on TV all the time. It's not good for our minds, you know. Just what you put into your mind, you become, you know. And light, it's a battle between light and darkness, my friends, good and evil. And that's a pretty big battle going on. And there's a lot of people dying. Even as we speak, people are dying all over the world right now. You know, today, I forget what the number is, thousands and thousands of people are dying all over the world right now, you know. And from what I heard, most recent thing I heard, a lot of them are going to dark places in the spirit realms. Why? Because their minds have been endarkened, if you will, by the materials they read, what they watch on television, what they talk about. They create their own negative energy, dark energy around them. So on my show, Gods and Goddesses, which says, if you check out BBS Radio's website for my show, that we are all co-creative gods in the making. It's the truth, I guarantee it, my friends. We'll see one day when we get to heaven. I know there's going to be a lot of people walking up to me saying, I listened to your radio show, and you were right about a lot of things. But you know what? Even if there was just one person listening to my show, even none. I don't know how many. I don't really care, you know, how many people. I would like a lot of people to listen to my show, but I'm not worried about the numbers, you know, 100, 150, 200, 1,000, whatever. But the main thing is I'm putting these words out into the atmosphere, and you don't have to be listening in order for these words to take effect, for people to hear what I'm saying. You can, people around me, can hear what I'm saying. I think the science of it is there's a psychosphere. There's a kind of like an atmosphere around our planet, and everything that is spoken is absorbed into that atmosphere. So you might have heard, speak into the atmosphere, speak words into the atmosphere. If you speak positive words, it changes things for the positive. Negativity, well, I mean, it exists, but it's not going to create. If anything, it will destroy. But positivity, positive words, create. And so light and darkness, my friends, good and evil, that battle is always going on. So I was telling you about that speech contest. I gave this inspirational thought. I'm going to read again what I read earlier this week on Tuesday. And it's from a book called Beyond the Darkness by Angie Fenimore. You should read it. It's an excellent book. I'm telling you, reading from all these books that I've read, sharing the knowledge that I've gained with you. And another thing, too, all these shows are archived, so people can listen to them afterwards. And that that is important to me. I like that. That's a great idea. So if I want to go back and listen to something, I can, or you can, you know. There's a wealth of knowledge that I share from what I've learned from other people, spirituality mainly, that you can use to make yourself more spiritual. Because at the end of the day, or by the end of your life, I was mentioning that a lot of people are going to dark places in the spirit lands. Doesn't have to be that way. You can change your life for the positive. You can speak those words of positivity. You know how to do it. If you're a live human being on this planet, you know the difference between negativity and positivity, light and darkness. You can do it. Even a five-year-old, even a baby knows the difference between light and darkness, you know? So in this book, Angie Fenimore, she tried to commit suicide. And it's important that everybody either reads this book or watches a video on YouTube by Angie Fenimore, A-N-G-I-E, Fenimore, F-E-N-I-M-O-R-E. There's about a 10-minute video on YouTube which tells about her experience, what she went through. Everything up until when she tried to commit suicide, and then what she experienced, how she left her body, two different planes she went to, other suicides that she saw, an encounter with a being of light, I guess you could say the spirit father, and there's a mother too, logically. This is a universe of male and female that we live in. A universe of male and female. Yes, it's not just one. You can't say God the Father without God the Mother, you know, because logically, it takes a mother and a father to create children. Case closed. It's as simple as that, my friends. The Bible, it's just, I'm not saying anything bad about the Bible. I love the Bible. I accept it for being, oh, hold on just a minute. Well, my wife just came home. She took the grandchildren to the beach at Corpus Christi. So they just came in through the door. Anyway, so I'm going to read from this book. And so she had an encounter with, I think, God the Father. And God the Mother does exist too. I guarantee it. Trust me on this. God the Father is a man, and a man wants a woman by his side. And how would he create the children? You know, I'm a son of God, and you're a son or a daughter of God, too. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. Yes, you are. And Jesus Christ, he was a son of God also, but you are, too. Don't be confused about that. You are. You are living. You have a heart, you have a brain, you are a child of God. You are wonderfully and fearfully made. You are awesome. We are awesome. So Angie Fenimore, she had this encounter with God, and it was incredible. You have to listen to it. And then she came back to life and she wrote this book. Is it any wonder that, you know, she wasn't left there on that dark plane with thousands of other suicides who are there just waiting for someone to pray for them or say some good thoughts about them or maybe just do their time, you know, like a purgatory. It's like a jail, God's jail, kind of, like hell is. So I'm going to read from this book this one little section that I read during the speech contest as an inspirational thought. So here it goes. Hold on. Okay, she learned this, Angie learned this. She says, we are, all of us, eternal creatures with endless potential. God the Father, and there is a mother, told me that he himself had a mortal existence on a world like ours and had progressed along a path by choosing good over evil. There you go. That is in accordance with my theory that our mother and father God in heaven, our co-creator God, who went through that same process of evolution that we're going through right now, living on planets, dying, being born on other planets. But they are different from the supreme creator of the universe who initiated the Big Bang. The supreme creator is separate. We can be like the supreme creator. We can use those forces, those cosmic forces and powers out there, if we know how to use them, speak the right words. We can never be the supreme creator, but we can be like the supreme creator. So isn't that a revelation that the Father God that you will see in heaven one day and the Mother God are beings that had mortal existences like we're having here on another world somewhere in the universe, I don't know where, and they achieved the rank of co-creator God through many, many lives, doing good over evil, in other words, choosing good over evil, light over darkness, and achieving that status. Let me continue reading. These words came as a surprise to me. The pattern of advancing spiritually by choosing good has been going on forever and will continue forever. I was told that there are countless worlds revolving around countless suns, and each is inhabited by children of God who are subject to these same laws. And since we are eternal creatures, there is no such thing as ultimate and total death. We die to live again. But where we live again depends on how we conduct our mortal lives, how we do here on earth, in other words. Are you being kind and generous? Are you choosing good over evil? Do you realize that some of the shows that you're watching are fantasy violence that's not really good for you? Would you stop to help somebody on the road who has been in an accident? What kind of person are you, in other words? The more we are willing to love, yes, the more light we create within ourselves. The more we're willing to love, the more light we create. The more we err, E-R-R, the more darkness we propagate. I was also told that as a woman, I was half of a whole entity. It's like I said before. When we're born, when we come into earth, when our souls and spirits come into existence, we are half of a whole entity. We have a soulmate. Male and female are the whole. Split, you have a male and female, half and a half. It is the union of a man and a woman that gives us procreative power, which is the most godlike power that we are allowed to assume as mortal beings. I was told that my husband and I are of equal importance in that union, but that we have different roles to perform. We are born with particular attributes, aside from differing physical endowments, that are gifts from God to help us perform these roles. That's what I read. That's on page 140, 141 of Beyond the Darkness by Angie Fenimore. I could continue talking about that particular subject. You know, soulmates, you have a soulmate out there. So do I. We all do. They could be in heaven waiting for you to get back. They could have reincarnated on another planet somewhere. They might be here on Earth somewhere in another country. Usually, in unions nowadays, in other words, when a man and a woman get married, they're not really soulmates. They might be, I think it's very, very rare for that to happen. They might be like their soulmate, and they might be very much in love with each other, but it's a different kind of love altogether when you're created as soulmates. They're like, you're their best friend. I mean, you're like part of them. You have that power, that potential to procreate, to do amazing things by using cosmic forces that exist out there. There's no one like your soulmate, but you have to understand what a soulmate is. You were both created at the same time. For me personally, I thought, well, that's kind of weird. In a way, it sounds incestuous, but it's not that way really in the spirit realms. You know, there's no bodily fluid involved with merging, you know, that reproductive process. There's a lot of mental instead of physical. Well, it's spiritual, actually. There are no physical touch kind of sexual relations in the spirit realm, you know? So your best friend next to the spirit mother and father is your soulmate. And, of course, Jesus, who died on the cross, who I call Brother Arioch. That's a long story. I won't go there. So I like to read from another book, kind of shifting gears here. So just before I do, though, let me just go back and say that book, if you could read that book or watch that video on YouTube, Angie Fenimore, Beyond the Darkness, and you have that knowledge, if you're someone who has suicidal tendencies, it'll be good for you to read that, because you'll know what happens, that it's a lot worse than, you know, continuing to live here on Earth. I mean, I know that we have a lot of problems, and they mount up and they overwhelm us, but it's only temporary, you know, and there's always light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, and taking one's life is not worth it. My God, you set a lot of bad wheels in motion. Not only that, you hurt the people that love you, who know you, your family. You put them on a ride that is 180 degrees from what your plan is supposed to be coming to this world. You know, we do have plans that we're supposed to follow, and that just puts a monkey wrench into everybody's plan, where you could have made the world a better place. All of a sudden, you've made the world a worse place because of what you did, what they do. Now, I understand. I went through it myself, you know. I'm not going to go into the details, but I've been there. I'm glad I didn't do it. I'm a human being, you know. I make mistakes, and I was thinking about it. Let's put it that way. A lot of people do think about it, but don't. It's a lot worse. It's 10 times worse, I guarantee it. Where are you going? Where you would go? A dark plane huddled around with thousands of other suicides who just mumble, walk around mumbling nonsensical stuff. And you go over and over again the reasons why you committed suicide. And there's no love, there's no hope, there's no light, there's no joy, no happiness there. It's timeout in a very ugly, not so good place. And there's lots of ways to see us through situations like that. Reading the Bible, reading other books, inspirational books, praying. Prayer works. It reminds me of this song I heard today while I was in a grocery store. It's called Bittersweet Symphony by a group from the 90s called The Verve. And it's an awesome song, one of the best songs I think I've ever heard in my life. Bittersweet Symphony, it starts out, 'cause it's a bittersweet symphony, that's life. Try to make ends meet. You're a slave to money, then you die. Anyway, it goes on to say, well, I've never prayed, but tonight I'm on my knees, yeah. I need to hear some sounds that recognize the pain in me, yeah. And so it goes. Recognize the pain, you know. And we recognize the pain in each other. But we don't throw in the towel, you know. We don't give up. We keep going. That's a good song. Listen to a bittersweet symphony by The Verve. Now I'm going to read another book, changing gears, changing subjects to the extraterrestrials that are out there. And as I read in that book, there are countless worlds revolving around countless suns out there. In the night sky, you look up, you see, oh, stars, you know, but really there's suns, other suns. That's why, check out my website on BBS Radio. And thanks, BBS Radio, for all you've done to help me, you know, with my radio show here, being able to speak these words into the atmosphere, into the internet radio land. You'll see that in my website, there, I got a picture of stars, which are really suns, and then they get bigger and bigger and bigger until you have that one big sun with my pretty face right there in front of it. And then the words in the background, co-create, we are co-creator gods in the making. Check it out. So there are lots and lots of other gods, of other gods, other children out there, other sentient beings, who have been in existence really a lot longer than we have. Logically, you have to accept that because we're in a spiral arm of the Milky Way galaxy. Now, a few million years ago, I'm guessing with this, could be more than that, the Milky Way galaxy didn't even exist. And the universe was still an incredibly large place, but it just didn't exist. The borders of infinite space are expanding as I speak. You know, isn't that amazing? Infinite space is expanding. New solar systems are being formed. New suns are being birthed or born probably every second. I mean, is that maybe not that every second, but every once in a while. I can't tell you the exact number, but new stars or suns are being born all the time. New solar systems are being formed all the time. New galaxies are being formed. Oof, the universe is such an incredibly large place. And as I've mentioned on other shows, and I would just love to say again and again, for those that might not have heard it before, you're tuning in for the first time. All the life here on Earth, the insects, you know, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of different types, different bodies, different sizes, shapes. The fish, the birds, the reptiles, the amphibians, the mammals, the flowers and the trees, if all that life here on Earth happened by accident, logically, I mean, even the fifth grade would say, yeah, that's logical. It could happen by accident elsewhere in the universe, anywhere in the universe. That's logical. Yes, even a three-year-old say, oh, okay, yeah, that's logical. That's logical. It could happen by accident elsewhere in the universe. You don't need an adult. You don't need to be an adult to understand that, you know? But if there is a creator, a powerful creator of the universe made of energy and matter, antimatter, dark matter, made of light, a pure being of light. Everything's made of light, my friends. I'll tell you a little secret. Everything is made of light. Every single object here on Earth is made of light. How do you like that, huh? Can you feel it? It's made from light energy. Light is made from light. We are beings of light. Our spirits are made of billions of electrons. light energy. We are made of light energy. That's why we can live in a fire. We can exist. Spirits can exist in a fire. Need I say any more? If you can burn in hell, you can sure exist in a fire, right? So this book, ETs are out there. I've told you about the Vergents before. The Greys, you know, with the big dark eyes, extremely wonderfully intelligent beings, just awesome, so incredibly intelligent, and they can traverse the universe in a very quick fashion with their spacecraft. They know how to warp time space and go interdimensional, you know, where you're traveling like a thought. You can move from A to B. You can just think about being in B and you're there, if you know what I mean. So the author is Philip Kraft. I was in touch with him. It's been a while. I told you before on other shows that I did reach out to him in my last duty assignment in the Army. We exchanged emails. And he is an awesome author. Just a fantastic author. The contact has begun. So these aliens, extraterrestrials, what they do is they love to explore uncharted solar systems. And apparently, even after traveling through the universe for 290 million years, they're still coming upon uncharted solar systems. Can you grasp what that means? How big the universe is? I can grasp it. It's like, wow, it is so huge. Now, even a fifth grader can tell you, you know, there's got to be life out there. It's not rocket science, you know. It's very logical. What I was saying, you know, before, if there is a creator, going back to what I was saying before, sorry, jumping around here a little bit. If there is a creator who is powerful and knowledgeable enough to create all this life on Earth, then logically that creator would be powerful and knowledgeable enough to create either the same or different life anywhere, A-N-Y-W-H-E-R-E, in the universe, anywhere. So there is life out there. We don't need NASA to spend billions of dollars and send a probe to Europa, one of Jupiter's moons, sink it beneath the ice, the like 60 miles thick of ice there, which you can see clearly on the surface. And they believe there's an ocean underneath the ice. And then that probe would sink through the ice, go down to the bottom of the ocean to what they think are hydrothermal vents there, like we have here on Earth, where there's usually a lot of life, and take photographs of what they suspect to be, what they think will be life around those hydrothermal vents on Europa. We don't need them to spend billions of dollars just to prove to us that there is life, not only on Europa, but somewhere else in the solar system, maybe on Mars, and maybe a different kind of life like we never even thought it could be on some of the other planets which are farther away from the sun, like Saturn or Neptune, you know. Because the word life could be defined in a larger context, so to speak, you know. And we don't need a piece of a spacecraft to prove to us that these ETs exist. We can bridge the gap between belief and knowledge. Instead of saying, I believe, we can say, I know. I know. I can't give you an example right off the top of my head, but there are situations where we can bridge that gap between belief and knowledge and say, I know. You know, I know I'm going to die. I don't believe I'm going to die. One day I will, hopefully far into the future. You know, so this book, The Contact, has begun. So Philip Kraft was abducted or taken aboard the spacecraft without his permission. Permission, that's called an abduction. And he wrote this book called The Contact Has Begun back in the 90s. And it's an amazing read. He's such a great author, funny, very humorous. So the purpose of him being abducted was to write this book. Simply put, the white book, they put it, the manuscript for the way ahead for the contact between our species and theirs. And that's what they do, you know, these extraterrestrials. That's how they make contact with a different species. You know, they set up an observation 1,000 years before they actually make contact, you know, and they watch them as they evolve, take their first steps into outer space. And if they're a ferocious, warlike species, hey, does that ring a bell? Well, there are apparently some ferocious, warlike species out there besides us, which are kept to their planet. You know, they're not allowed to venture out into outer space because space is supposed to be a peaceful domain. That's why I never liked the Star Wars movies. I don't like the title Star Wars. Isn't that crazy? I mean, why would someone want to destroy outer space? You know, Star Wars? Why would you want to take the war that we have here into outer space? That's just like only young souls think that way, you know? Really. Space is supposed to be a peaceful domain. We're supposed to be living in harmony here on Earth, you know? I mean, we've had so much war in the past. There's no good reason for killing each other. None. Not at all. Anyway, so this book, they were telling him about this whole process, you know, it was an indoctrination orientation of what they were going to expect of him, what he had to do, the whole nine yards, so to speak, of when they find a planet that has life on it, And they begin abducting all these different people that have roles to perform. They call them ambassadors, people from all walks of life, doctors, lawyers, soldiers, all kinds of people from every walk of life, you know. And the goal is to eventually get everything out into the media. I'm going to take another drink of water here. My mouth is getting dry. So the media, as you know, nowadays, doesn't really carry too much news about UFOs, flying saucers, extraterrestrials. They're just not interested in that, you know. There's other things. They're more concerned with politics, you know, suffice it to say. I'll leave it at that. So I recommend you read this book, too. The Contact Has Begun is one of my favorite books. And let me read what it says here. In the initial stages of the study of Earth, the human species was classified as borderline, one that quite possibly would have to be confined to its home planet, like I was saying before. While the human animal was not considered anywhere near as vicious or ferocious as some of the worst species that the Verdans had come across, its warlike tendencies were cause for some concern. The human species, I was told, is the most diverse that the Verdans had ever encountered. Such diversity is a rarity in the universe of civilized beings. And although the Verdans have come to expect the unexpected, this came as a mild surprise to them. Until they discovered humans, they had never encountered a species in which there were wide character variations between individuals in the group. That is, a species might be good or evil, or any graduation in between, but never good and evil existing side by side in the same species. Additionally, each individual was a microcosm of the whole. That meant that we could judge the character of an entire civilization by simply studying one individual. Tom said, one of the Verdans, if we found a moral individual, the species itself, as well as all other individuals, was moral. When we came across barbarians, the species invariably turned out to be barbaric. However, discovery of human beings and the infinite variations in character that constitute the species threw a monkey wrench into that formula. Never before had we seen cruel and remorseless individuals exist side by side with kind and compassionate ones within the same species, Tom said. Destructive and murderous people walk among the caring ones on Earth. Tyrannical governments rule over peaceful and gentle people, while immoral people exist under benevolent governments. This phenomenon, this range of diversity among humans, is absolutely fascinating. They came to understand that humans not only vary from individual to individual, but also between individuals and the group as a whole. It took some time for the Verdans to make these distinctions. Your long history of warfare, which we have personally observed, told us that we were looking at a savage race, Tom continued. On the group level, we witnessed international conflict, corruption, thievery, the rape of the environment, the plunder of natural resources, and the unspeakable cruelty of genocide. On an individual level, we observed mendacity, thievery, murder, child abuse, hypocrisy, sadism, and cowardice of epidemic proportions. All of these things spoke of a depraved species, Tom explained. But closer scrutiny revealed individual accomplishments in the arts, music, literature, and architecture that demonstrated a surprising nobility of spirit and mind. It was these redeeming qualities that caused the Verdans to change their minds about us. Humankind's status was upgraded to acceptable after the Verdan scientists had enough data to confidently predict that the species could safely be welcomed into the intergalactic community with certain reservations. So it wouldn't be a stretch to say that humankind will find its place in the heavens thanks to the refined, intelligent, gentle, cultured people who walk among us. It was their contributions that caught the Verdan's attention and convinced them that the species was worth nurturing. The nurturing of the human species presented a unique challenge, they said, one that they had never faced before. Typically, when helping prepare other species to make the transition from planet-bound animal to star traveler, the Verdans simply shared their technology with the entire civilized species. But that formula won't work because of humankind's unrivaled diversity. The goal in this case is to preserve the redeeming qualities in the species while ensuring that the darker elements of the human character, personified by the dangerous rogues of society, are isolated. In other words, to resort to a platitude, they wouldn't throw the baby out with bathwater. That is, the better nature of humankind, represented by the gentle people, the artists, the thinkers, the lovers, the dreamers, the scholars, the builders, the hundreds of millions of moral people who live ordinary lives of decency, would be welcomed into the Intergalactic Federation. But there would be no place in the cosmos for the wicked and immoral, those who by their very words and deeds on Earth have demonstrated that they are not fit candidates for membership in the cosmic community. One prime example of those to be excluded would be leaders of governments whose record on human rights falls short of minimum standards. The Verdans have decided that the best approach to achieve these goals is to encourage the good people of Earth to police themselves, to take responsibility for ensuring that dangerous scoundrels are quarantined and not allowed access to the heavens. Any failure in this regard could lead to loss of privileges for the entire species. This could mean being forced back out of space until such time as humankind demonstrates that it has resolved the problem and can keep the troublemakers restricted to the planet. Well, How am I doing on time, my friends? Time seems to fly. Oh, my God, it's almost time. 6:52. 1 hour goes by so quickly. It's getting dark, too. I've mentioned this before. My show begins at 6 o'clock, and over the last few weeks, the sun has been setting a little higher in the sky, on the horizon, every week. It's an amazing thing to watch, you know, because I'm out here in my patio every Saturday. I love to be out here in the fresh air. And it's pretty pleasant right now, about 70 degrees. And that's amazing to me, you know, how the planet is rotating on an axis and revolving around the sun in such a special way. Like the sun, and not only are we're going to go forward in time, you know, daylight savings time, but, you know, I've been watching the sunset every Saturday for the last 6 weeks or so. And back in around the beginning of February, when my show began at 6 o'clock, it was almost dark, you know, and even in January, it was, you know, I could say even in January, it was dark or close to being dark, like about right now, 6 o'clock. You know, now it's almost 7 o'clock here. So don't forget to turn your clocks ahead an hour, my friends. And remember, we are not alone in the universe. I wish we could make contact, you know. I don't want to die, have my life come to an end here, and not see, you know, what these extraterrestrials look like, you know. I know it'll be scary. It'll be terrifying. Because, I mean, when you come face to face with a being that has the knowledge to get from here to Alpha Centauri, you know, the closest star, sun, solar system, 4 light years away in like 5 minutes. They know how to do that. I mean, that knowledge would just like, boom, hit you in the face, you know? And they know how to, and they've been around so many other galaxies, you know? They've seen so much. They've been traveling throughout the universe for such a long time. All the different species, you know, supposedly, I was mentioning the Intergalactic Federation of Sovereign Planets out there. It says that in that book, there are approximately 26,000 different species in the intergalactic, I mean, just the Milky Way galaxy alone, 26,000 different types of beings, my friends, some that look like us humans, taller and shorter. There are some human beings that are like 3 feet tall. And there are some species out there, sentient beings, that have different kinds of skin, kind of like a coarse bark-like skin, or maybe scaly skin like fish, different colored eyes, different colored hair, some hair that looks like feathers. It can be wide, you know, like kind of square-like. Very tall, maybe 12 feet tall. They can shine with the light. They can have different colored teeth, green teeth even. And so, please, I've got a minute left. Just look up at those suns up in the evening sky, my friends, and think about our intergalactic brothers and sisters out there just waiting for us to evolve enough so that we can handle the truth, you know, so we can handle the truth. That's it, and I'm going to say one prayer for us and then say goodbye. For the Supreme Creator of the Universe to bless us. Supreme Creator of the Universe, please bless us, everyone. We love you. Thank you for everything. Goodbye, everybody. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.